Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 62. And we are here tonight on both DLive and also on RadioAlbion.com. Radio Albion is the brainchild of Sven Longshanks, a good friend of mine, and we are lucky enough to stream there every week, as well as streaming here on DLive. Now, of course, if after the show you want more top-quality nationalist content, Radio Albion is a great place to get it. There are many shows, many restreams. It's packed with content. In fact, there's probably so much content on Radio Albion that even if you watched 24/7, it would leave you no time to do anything else or even sleep for that matter. It's packed with good stuff, so please make sure you support Radio Albion. It's a great site, and it does restream this show. We are also live on Entropy, and that is the best way to contribute to the show. Now, Entropy allows you to send financial contributions as super chats, and any comment sent as a super chat is read out live on the show. Now, the link to the Entropy is on my Telegram, it is on my Twitter, and it is also in the live chat of DLive right now. So if you want to contribute, the best way is Entropy. Now, as I said, all super chats are read out on the show, but you can also ask non-paid questions. And the best non-paid questions are asked on the show every week because questions on Entropy are voted on. So good questions rise up and, how should we put it, less good questions go down. So less good questions don't get asked, but the best non-paid questions every week, usually the top three, are asked to the panel every week. And we have an amazing panel tonight. Obviously, Mike Enoch is joining us, and I'll be introducing him in a moment. Another way to contribute is via Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is on my BitChute. Please, if you want to donate in another way, Bitcoin is a great way to do it. And as people know, all donations go to a good cause. And we'll be talking about a very good cause in a moment. Now, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And if you want to donate directly via bank transfer, you can email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And I will send you the details to donate that way. Now, if you have any problems, comments, or would like to get in touch with myself, you can drop me an email. I do my best to answer every email that is sent to me, unless they are just circulars or links without any context. Now, before we get into the meat of the show, I have a couple of announcements. The first is that Laura Towler, the great Laura Towler, she's doing wonderful work. I hope you've all been keeping up with her YouTube account because she's just done an amazing activity report of our hike the other weekend in the Peak District where we unfurled the 11-meter-long White Lives Matter banner. But she on Friday at, I believe, 7 p.m. is going to be debating a For Britain member, a civic nationalist. So that's going to be pretty spicy. And I hope you will all put that in the diary. Now, I will be promoting that heavily throughout the day, so keep tuned to my Telegram, my Parler, my Gab, and my Twitter, and I will make sure I will send out plenty of links to that show. And talking of sending out links, if you haven't sent this stream out to all of your friends, tweeted it out, send it out on Facebook, make sure you do, because we need to get the word out. We're no longer on YouTube. We know why we're no longer on YouTube. So please help build these alternative platforms. Now, the final announcement before we go to Jason and then before we introduce Mike is, if you haven't heard, if you've been living under a rock recently, if you've been living under a rock, you wouldn't have heard this, but we are planning a huge day of action on August the 9th. Now, this day of action coincides with World Indigenous Peoples Day, and we are taking White Lives Matter banners, posters, leaflets, and anything you can make, putting them in public places, photographing them, uploading them to social networks with the hashtag White Lives Matter, and we are going to try to get White Lives Matter trending on Indigenous Peoples Day. We are the Indigenous people of the British Isles. We have a right to be heard, and we are the greatest victims of racism in this country. Our daughters are groomed. Our young men are attacked. Just the other day, there was a horrific case of a young white girl called Keely Bunker, who was brutally raped and murdered by a black man. Yet there are no protests. There's no influencers changing their profile pictures all of these things happen to our people and no one says a word. And it's about time the world knew that white lives matter. So please help us on that day. Now, before we introduce Mike, let's go over to Jason. What have you been up to this week, my friend? And who's on tap?
Well, it has been an absolutely amazing week, an amazing yesterday, all things coming true, just exactly as planned. And this is so fantastic. I just can't even, I've been over the moon. I had Beethoven's Ode to Joy playing in my mind, and it wouldn't leave. So it's magnificent, the victories that we are having right now. Everybody should be very excited. Coming up on tap this week on Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we are going to have James Fox Higgins with us. So make sure you see that. That will be on the No White Guilt channel, as well as Discipline and all of the other platforms that we live stream on at the same time. And I also want to take an opportunity to point out that we have a great colleague, Mr. Jared George. And you can find Mark and I are wont to celebrate those in our community. And Jared George is one of those we want to support. And his website is thegreatorder.com. Make sure you follow all the work that the great Jared George is doing as well. Fantastic to be here with Mike Enoch and, of course, Mark Collett and all of you in the live chat. And look forward to a very exciting show. Pass it back.
Well, thank you. And it is going to be an exciting show. Please make sure you share this stream. Last week, we broke all records with 3,100 people watching. And I think we deserve to break them again tonight, because the guy we have on tonight is one of the all-time PWR favorites. He is used to a massive audience and absolutely deserves it. Mike Enoch is one of the greatest content creators, speakers, and nationalist debaters that the world has ever known. He has humiliated many anti-whites. He has brought us entertainment. He has brought us hot takes. He was a champion when the blood sports scene was active. And he, of course, runs one of the biggest, if not the biggest, pro-white network in the whole world, TRS. He is the host of, I'm not allowed to call it its full name anymore.
just the initials. We just go by the initials. Just
TDS. TDS. Yeah. And Mike really is a hero of this movement. And I am positive that he has brought more people to our sphere than almost anybody. So please give a warm welcome to Mike. Mike, tell us what you've been up to. Fill us in on the time we've been apart. And of course, plug your excellent work so all of our viewers know where we can catch up with you.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. Thank you for the high praise. It's a little bit, I'll try to be humble. You can find us on therightstuff.biz. TDS is Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Friday is for members only. I also do Strike and Mike with the great Eric Stryker, the host of the national-justice.com website, where he breaks really incredible journalism coming out of Stryker on that site. Really very breaking stories. We can talk about some of the stuff he's uncovered on the show later. Most my stuff can be at therightstuff.biz, Strikers at National Justice. I was on Twitter until 2 weeks ago, but I unfortunately was locked out of my account and I don't have the burner phone I was using to access that Twitter. I long ago canceled the numbers, so I can't get back in. So that account is effectively gone, unless I can figure out some magic, but Twitter doesn't even respond to that stuff. So I'll be back on Twitter soon, but there go 15,000 followers. That sucks. But what can you do? It's only like I would never violate the terms of service and try and avoid a ban on Twitter. That would of course be against the rules. But so that's basically where I'm at. We've been doing, where we've been is we've been just covering what I call this sort of bourgeois Bolshevik revolution that we have going on in America right now. And I think it's spread over to the UK as well. And it's really spread to the rest of Europe. And it's even, they're even trying to spread it to places like Japan and things like that, where they took the event of this, the death of this guy in Minneapolis, George Floyd. And they have tried to implement like full spectrum attack on whites. And it's just, it's actually levels of acceleration on the part of the anti-whites that I was a bit thunderstruck by myself at first, but now it's sort of almost become the norm. Over the last 2 months in America, we have gotten used to the fact that essentially any white person's livelihood, job, family, home, or whatever is essentially at risk should either some kind of anarchist or any random black person decide, I'm going to get you on, I'm just going to film you and call you racist. And the entire structure, from the government to every corporation to small business, either goes along with this willingly or cowers before it and will stab you in the back. And this is an intolerable situation. White people are still the majority of the United States, although ever dwindling. We do have a right to live here. I actually argue, you said that Britons were the indigenous people of Britain. Well, look, the Scots-Irish conquered much of America, and they have every right to live here too. So I would say that we are dealing with this insane anti-white Bolshevik revolution. I call it Bolshevik because that's what they're doing. I mean, they are destructive. They are attacking people. They are using all the methods of social, psychological control that Bolsheviks use. This is what's going on. And white people, a lot of them that haven't been paying attention or thought Donald Trump was going to have their back, they are caught absolutely off guard by what's been going on in America. And people, we've had, at the same time, though, unprecedented spike in our viewership and listenership, because people, if nobody out there, from Democrats to Republicans, conservatives, liberals, libertarians, if none of them will accurately describe reality, well, we're going to be the only ones that will, and then people are going to listen to us because we're the only people making sense. I'm sure you guys are also having a spike in support because of this exact same reasoning, I think.
Yes, and there is something I want to bring up today, which really shocked me, actually. And I think you'll have probably quite a good take on this. Now, Donald Trump was obviously elected nearly 4 years ago now. And he was elected because of white people. He was elected because the white majority finally had enough. And he was elected with a huge, huge majority. Not a majority in terms of the popular vote, but a majority in terms of states that voted him in. And that might be a bit foreign to people who don't understand how the American system works, but the American system works not on numbers of people who voted, but on the way individual states vote. And that's done, for people who don't understand, so that no one state can just increase the numbers of people living in that state and then dominate all others. It's to make sure each state gets an equal say in the way the union is run. And like Trump won
New York and California, where all the majority, if you remove the effective majority, then the country voted massively for Trump if you take those two states away. So yeah.
Exactly. But it's done on a state-by-state basis. Mm-hmm. So although Trump didn't win what's known as the popular vote, he won by a massive majority in terms of states that elected him or chose him to be president. But for years, we've been saying, look, Trump, it was white people who voted you in. Stop talking about black unemployment figures. Stop talking about what you're going to do for the black community, the Jewish community, the Hispanic community. And finally, the other day, he did something that I don't think, unless I'm wrong here, and I might be, he used the word white.
He used second time.
Word, second time, but it was a big one. Now, I've got this on my phone, and I am going to have a look down and just read it, because the Daily Mail weren't very happy about this.
Oh, no. The Daily Mail, interesting, because they're supposed to be the right-wing paper, right?
Well, Daily Mail sort of ran it as a bit of an outrage headline. White people are being killed too. More white people. Trump's response when asked why black Americans are still being killed by cops. Now, this has gone absolutely massive. And of course, Trump is right. For every 10,000 arrests of violent criminals in the States, for every 10,000 arrests of black people who are being arrested for a violent crime, 3 people die. For every 10,000 arrests of white people being arrested for a violent crime, 4 people die. So on a per capita basis...
You mean at the hands of police?
Yeah, at the hands of police.
Yes.
On a per capita basis, arrest for arrest, a white person is actually more likely to die at the hands of police than blacks. Now, Trump has not only acknowledged this, but he's actually used the term white. And I think this is the most naked sort of example of Trump finally reaching out to the white man. But the question is it too little too late? Or is he finally saying what needs to be said? And is this going to push him to a second term? Because we talk about Trump quite a lot on this show. And for the last few weeks, we've had a range of different guests, but we've had Devin Stack, we've had Vincent James, and they had a lot to say about Trump. And obviously you're another American guest, but this is a huge, huge thing because I can't remember, and people in the chat can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't really know when the last time a president or a prime minister here in Britain has used the term white like that in a positive way to push back against an anti-white narrative. Mm-hmm. If you have any examples, please, I'm willing to be proven wrong. But what do you think about this? Is it too little too late, or is this the start of some great fight back?
Well, this is a... This is a complicated issue. I would say that actually the word white has come out of the Trump administration, not necessarily out of his mouth, but out of the administration. I don't trust him. I'm just going to put that right there. And in fact, if you have listened to my content over the last couple of years, we have been predicting at TRS, not just me, Jazz Hands and Stryker and Sven and James Alsop, who also does a show on our channel. We have all sort of been predicting that as it gets closer to the election, Donald Trump is going to start being more and more based. He's going to start these more sort of naked kind of red meat appeals. Frankly, you know, to give him credit, Richard Spencer said this on CNN last year as well. This is going to be what he does. Now, I think in the Trump administration, you know, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is still sitting right there controlling what he does. People want to do this blame Jared thing, but the blame Jared thing, it's like, well, if you blame Jared, then Trump has to be blamed too, because then if Jared can tell Trump what to do, then he can also tell Trump, don't fire me. So he's just in control. Now, I don't know how in control he is or not, but I think Trump might just be on board. But remember, Trump had no problem. The barrier he broke in American politics was sort of trampling over the politically correct norms that had been decided over the previous several decades of how politicians are supposed to act. He just steamrolled them and everybody loved it. The powers that be didn't really like this, but as it turned out, Trump was a bit of a fraud, I think. And I think what he did was he was just saying, hey, you guys left on the table this whole pack of voters. I'm going to tap that and I'm going to gain power. And of course, what I'm going to really do is give a lot of favors to my friends in Israel, a lot of favors to my friends in big business, pretend I'm going to get immigration reform done. Didn't happen. He didn't even get the DACA people. Now, I would be happy with maybe some fewer base tweets and a little bit more control of the border, perhaps maybe an actually effective wall, not just a fence, not just an ineffective fence that the Mexican smugglers are already, you know, cutting through with, you know, saws they can buy at Home Depot. So, frankly, it's what I predicted and have been predicting for a few years, that when Trump gets into where he's actually up against the election, he's going to come back to his white voters who he hasn't served for 3.5 years. Why couldn't he be doing this on day one? Because if he can do it now, he could have done it then. And so I don't trust him. And my policy here is I think that white people should hold out their support for Trump, because if all he has to do is say white people once and everybody comes running, then he doesn't have any reason to do anything more. Hold out your support. See what else he does next. Because if he really wants to win that election, he's going to get more and more and more explicit about this stuff. Because this is what, there's a massive people in this country that are totally unrepresented, that are totally disenfranchised, and that's mainly white working people. And they feel like they have no representation, they have no institutions, they have no advocates. Donald Trump is sort of a fake advocate, and he's played that part well. But it's running a bit thin. But when he gets more and more explicit, people start to get convinced maybe this is real. So I'm saying to all of us that are actually woke to this stuff, not sort of the average guy reacting in a way that doesn't quite understand everything. Those of us that understand it, hold out your support. Wait, see what he does. See what we can push him to do. The fact that he's appealing to us means that he in some way needs us at the very least if he wants to win the election. So I'm still saying I'm not supporting him yet. I'm waiting because I'm not selling my vote and my support so cheap that it's all he has to do is one tweet or one thing after 4 years, one or two tweets. I'm not selling myself that cheaply. And I'm not about Trump. Trump is not the reason for this. The white race is the reason for this. So that's my take.
Well, I'm going to throw this over to Jason because Jason, I saw this on your Twitter actually, because you did a tweet, didn't you, where you actually retweeted Trump actually saying this, and that's why I actually saw it. Because sometimes when you see a Daily Mail headline, things can be taken a little bit out of context.
you don't know quite what the reality is, but
exactly. So when I saw Jason retweeting, I thought, oh my gosh, this must actually be real. Trump's gone and used the term white. Now Mike said he's used it once before. I wasn't aware of that. But what was your take on this, Jason? Because are you happy about this? You seemed happy in your tweet, but I might have misread it. What? Give us your take, please, my friend.
I'm ecstatic. Mike, when did he use it? You mean it came out of the administration? His administration used it.
Well, the administration says it all the time. But when they're talking about clamping down on white supremacist so-called terrorists, like all the time people in his office, and you know, right, coming out of the Department of Justice and high up posts of people he's appointed, talk about evil white supremacists all the time. So, you know, he doesn't say that because that would be risky. Yeah. The other time he said it, he was talking about like another fake thing that never came to be, which was he's going to help whites in South Africa. Never did anything for them. And people got excited because they're like, yes, please. The America should help whites in South Africa. I think we should. It would be very popular, but no action.
Right. No action. There's a lot to complain about when it comes to Donald over the past 4 years. Undoubtedly, he's made a lot of big promises that we put a lot of hope in, and we expected there to be a lot of substance to it. And in fact, we said here, Mark, if you remember, that we would see a lot right away, maybe even putting himself right into a bunker as he implemented military tribunals and arrested hundreds, maybe even thousands of judges. Because we said, you know, they would be stopping every order that he made, and mayors and governors would be doing the same sorts of things, police chiefs. And of course, he just made the gestures, the overtures, wrote the orders, and these people knocked them down, perhaps knowing that they would knock them down, and then doing nothing about that. But having said that, the question is, what metric are we using here when it comes to Donald Trump? I think there's a couple different metrics here and a couple different objectives overall. So perspectives, therefore, when we're talking about objectives. The first thing is that Donald Trump is a politician. He wants to remain in power. So somebody who wants water, they are going to do whatever they have to do to continue receiving the water at the public trough. So that means he is going to do things like say what he might need to say. However, having said that, there's a lot of things going on, and we've been talking about it specifically the past two Sundays, and it's some very exciting things going on. So when it comes to Trump and what he's saying, we can understand that this is a politician who is trying to stay in office, saying the things that he needs to say to be in office. However, what he just said yesterday was tectonic shifting on planet Earth, because what he just did was he named our race.
Yes.
And in, so that's A, he named our race. B, in naming our race, he named us as an entire group. And C, as part of the naming of our race as an entire group, he named us as victims of police crimes, being murdered even more. And this is the final thing, relative to the black population. This is an antithetical, exact contradiction of the anti-white narrative that always places the white race in the category of evil, and that always places the non-white races in the categories of victims. So he inverted it, and when he did it with disgust. He did it with disdain. So he was applying another narrative to the conversation that he was having with Catherine Herridge, and not saying at all that this guy is white positive or that he's secretly white positive. He's a politician that wants to win the next election. He's a politician that wants to remain in office. Nonetheless, though, he has had to open a floodgate and legitimize by doing so. The office of president He has just opened a floodgate that is, I haven't personally studied it, but those who have gone back through history and looked for any positive references from prime ministers or presidents, and I think the last that came closest to it was Theodore Roosevelt. So we're talking about, you know, the end of 1800, beginning of 1900s, Theodore Roosevelt. And it was like lukewarm neutral that it was said by this individual. We just had a guy, because we have reached such a state in this country that we are not going to survive. He is not going to be able to stay in office. We are not going to be able to survive as a people without this now inversion of anti-whiteism, the true enemy to Western civilization. And indeed, and our primary concern, of course, is Western kind. But indeed, to every non-white person that lives in the West who wants to continue to have things like running water, electricity, sewage removal, you know, the bread showing up on the shelves, they all want this sort of thing. The enemy of all of that stability and civilization is anti-whiteism. And Donald Trump, whatever his true sentiments are about our people, he just inverted the moral reality of our day. He just gave legitimacy. And I anticipate, so we can celebrate that legitimacy that was just given, because this is tectonic shifting. You should be doing backflips about it. At the same time, we have to be nuanced and intelligent enough to realize this is a politician trying to win another election. And he's going to say what he has to say to win the other election. And isn't that really where the kernel of these joys should be?
Yes.
That to win the next election, he has to come to us and he has to invert the anti-white narrative. Ladies and gentlemen, this is yesterday. My head blew off my shoulders. Everything has changed now. And I tell you this, I told you all this past Sunday and the Sunday before, to begin looking, and those with eyes to see would see as it rolled out. Well, if you didn't see this, you would have to go have your eyes checked. There's more coming. I will just say that.
Yeah.
You all should continue to get more excited. Mike, I want to hear what you have to say, because I know you're chomping at the bit there, brother.
Yeah, no, I agree with you that it is highly significant that this is the move he has to make. So we need not have much faith in his character, and I don't have much, to see that this is the move he has to make. And it's a move that, you know, in some way, there's something about Trump, there's something about his brazenness is why he's doing it. But that's sort of a personality issue. Someone like Mitt Romney would just take the L rather than do it, right? Like some other Republican, they would just take the loss. And this is actually creating this conflict. And I am not saying that Trump is going to do something for us. I still don't think he will. And I also think as you know, in sort of agreement with Jason, I think if we don't jump at the first little bit of bait dangle before us, he's going to have to dangle more. You want him to see him get more pro-white? You want to see him juke the narrative more? Continue to hold out support for him. Continue to be critical, because he will have to get more and more based as it goes. He'll have to get more pro-white. I want to force him to be openly supporting white people, even if he's going to totally stab us in the back come January. I want to force him. I want to put him in the position where he feels the only way I stay in that chair behind that desk in the Oval Office is if I get more and more pro-white and openly defend white people. And I think that will be very interesting, and that will create. Now, the fact that Trump is willing to do this is what's created a lot of the conflict that we've seen in the political class over the last 4 years, because the consensus prior to Trump was we just don't do this. And if Republicans have to take the L, they take the L by not appealing to whites. They will take that loss. Jeb Bush, willing to lie down for that. Every other Marco Rubio, Mitt Romney, every other one of these people was willing to just, oh, I'm never going to represent. I'm not even going to say whites. I mean, think about this. This is a 60% white country, according to the preview of the census figures, which are going to be coming out soon, the 2020 census. 2010, it was something like 68%. You know, it used to be 75 going back 50 years, 85%. I mean, think about this. Look at that. Just that alone is an amazing loss of percentage over the years. And this amazingly, it's a Democratic country, 60% white. It seems to me the winning formula is appeal to whites racially, particularly whenever every other group is appealed to racially. And the game for so long in America has been Blacks, Hispanics, Jews, they get to be appealed to their groups and act for the power of their own groups, openly celebrated in public, homosexuals as well, celebrated in public. I know that's not a race, but it kind of is. Like, celebrated publicly. Everyone loves it. Everyone else is invited to celebrate with them how great they are. White people, no. In fact, you know, a lot of people say, you know, you're really not supposed to talk about Jewish people. I know. I don't even know if I'm supposed to on this show. There's a risk, right? You know, they're very powerful. If you say something bad, you could get shut down, whatever. You know what you're really not supposed to talk about? It's white people, even more so than Jewish people, because you can talk about Jewish people if you say something really good about them. You're allowed to praise them. You're not allowed to praise white people. So I think that forcing Trump into that position, it was I agree, it was a massive thing. I mean, you could see from the reaction of the elite media, boy, no, they don't like that. They don't want that. And that's why you get stuff like the Mueller investigation, people like Roger Stone, even though I think Roger Stone is not the best guy. But that's why they throw these guys in jail, because they were like, okay, we're going to do a gamble here for political power. We're going to appeal. We're going to touch this third rail of white interests, white people, you know, sort of with dog whistles. But as the time for the next election draws nearer, and because Trump hasn't done anything, you know, if he had fulfilled his promises and built a wall, cut down on immigration, brought jobs and all that stuff, like he was saying, basically started restoring white America, he wouldn't have to do this. In a way, he could have kept like the racial narrative under wraps if he just helped white people, but he didn't help us. So now he's got to make these explicit racial appeals. But I actually, you know, I don't know which I would rather have, because I want to move white people towards a collective racial consciousness. I think that's what we need. We need to see ourselves as white. You see that as a thing that we should be, that's more important than Republican, Democrat, socialist, capitalist, liberal, conservative. Like, people are going to have all those different kinds of views. White people love to argue about these kinds of things, right? So we're always going to do that amongst each other. But that's our primary identity, is our race. And that's how other people operate. And we have the right to operate that way, too. And that's what the system really doesn't want, because then we have white power and we take back our country.
Well, I agree. And I agree with your skepticism, but I also agree with Jason's sort of enthusiasm, because there is a lot for us to be skeptical about. But sometimes it gets a little bit tiring, doesn't it? Always being skeptical, always being on our guard. And I think this is genuinely something to be happy about. And it's something to be happy about for two reasons. The first reason is probably the lesser of the two. And that is, I don't believe that Donald Trump has all of a sudden become the next great white hope, and that he's going to abandon all of his friends from Israel, and that he's going to become a full-on white nationalist. And the next thing you know, he's going to be making some crazy book suggestions on PWR with me one week. That isn't going to be happening. But one thing that you cannot underestimate, and one thing that you should always be happy for, is the fact that he said it. Now, I said this repeatedly at the last election. He did many, many things that were good for us. Firstly, he legitimized the talk about immigration. He opened up a huge debate about demographics. And they were things that at one time were very, very taboo. Now, he didn't come good with policy, but he sure as hell shifted the discourse in our direction. Mm-hmm. I also said that he was hugely polarizing, and polarization is something that we need. He polarized people. He made the left very angry. He made many people on the right and many people like us very, very happy. So that was good. He pleased us. He upset them. And he made the divide almost irreconcilable. You don't now see people getting along with each other if they have different political views. He opened up a divide, as did Brexit in the UK, which just hasn't healed. And that is very good. He also pushed policies and talking points that meant when he won, the left showed their true colours. And a lot of that, again, led to a further polarisation. But if he starts talking about race, And if he starts talking about whites as a group that are hard done by, about as a group that are effectively second class citizens, and starts pushing that, okay, he might not deliver in terms of policy, but he would legitimize that as a talking point, and he would solidify that in people's minds as something that is absolutely legitimate and something that should be campaigned on. Now, I for a long time have said the whole problem here is not just the demographic shift. It's the fact that when the demographic shift happens, we won't just be second class citizens. We'll be a hated and despised minority that are treated as not just second class citizens, but as a complete underclass that are the lower than the low. We'll be treated like subhumans, essentially. And if Donald Trump keeps feeding the narrative that we're talking about tonight and talking of whites as a group that are increasingly being victimized, as a group that should stand together, as a group that should essentially fight for their rights as blacks and Hispanics and other groups do, then okay, he might not have delivered, but that is another important step in moving the Overton window in our direction. And yes, I'm not saying Trump has been absolutely fantastic in office. He hasn't. He has been very poor in actually enacting policy that helps us. However, when it comes to shifting the Overton window, he has been quite good, more than quite good, really. And we have to remember that the left didn't gain power by, or didn't get the West into the mess it's in today, by instantly taking power and enacting every bit of their, or every one of their wildest fantasies into policy. They shifted the Overton window first. And you'll actually see this is quite interesting, because the left in the UK shifted the Overton window so far that, in fact, the Conservative Party enacted most of the left-wing social policy that you see today. Now, what I'm saying is, I'm not saying Trump is a great white hope. I'm not saying he's going to be the next great political leader who is absolutely based and returns us to the greatness of Western civilization. He's not the emperor of mankind from Warhammer 40,000 that's going to lead legions of space marines to victory over the hordes of chaos or anything. But he is moving the Overton window in our direction. And I think that is something we have to take as a positive. And if we don't take any positives from anything, if we are that group that every time something happens, we always treat it with skepticism and we always pour scorn on it, it can be quite exhausting to people in our group. And it can also be quite off-putting to people who want to join our group if we're always talking negatives. And I think this is a positive for the aforementioned reasons. So is there anyone who'd like to say anything further on this before we get on to the Black Lives Matter statue? Go ahead, Mike.
I think that I somewhat disagree with kind of what – I don't want to like do a hard disagree, but I think what we really have to understand is if Trump is doing it, it's not him that's doing the shift. He's reacting to it. We did the shift. We made that shift. Us here, as well as a lot of our colleagues and friends that have been very vocal and very active in pushing these narratives and influencing thousands of people. Remember, if you influence a person who's very politically minded, that person who's the kinds of people that tune into our stuff, they go and influence people in their family, at their job, their circle of friends, their cousins, whatever it might be. And so there's this out sort of these concentric circles of influence. We've had a massive influence, and Trump sort of understood also that in the United States, maybe in the UK, you don't get quite as much of a feel of what the sort of the feel is on the street here, or the feel amongst sort of like average white people, ordinary, well, not like big city liberals and those types, which they've always wanted the Mexicans out. I mean, you talk to a blue collar guy at the gas station or what have you at the bar. For the last 20 years, can we get these Mexicans? Like, one, they're stealing our jobs. Two, like, I'm tired of this mariachi music or whatever it is that they're doing. You know, any vaguely sort of racial comments that will be made. But this is the average view. And then Trump comes out, and he's like, well, this – see, he saw the untapped reservoir. That was the one thing he did. So it's not just like he himself did it. He's taking advantage of a deliberately left untapped population, deliberately abandoned people. Like, the Republican Party would have loved nothing more than to never discuss immigration except maybe as an afterthought, a debate, and then just go ahead and rubber stamp every amnesty policy, because that's what their donors want. That's what big business wants. And that's what various lobby groups that pay them want. So, you know, I think that we should be, I think it's very positive that he did this, but I'm not giving him credit. I'm giving us credit. We are forcing him to do this, and I think we should force him to do it more. I want him to do it again. I want him to do it harder next time. I want him to double down and triple down, and I want him to do it because he fears losing our support if he doesn't. So you can't just fawn over the guy, and I'm not saying you guys are doing that, but my strategy, again, people have different strategies. My strategy is always to be kind of hard. Like, I'm not the nicest guy. Okay. Let's be honest. I can be rough. And my strategy is to attack. My strategy is to go after you, go right for the throat, you know, metaphorically speaking, not violent, but I'm always going to be really hard on people because I want you to get, I want them to get whipped into shape. I want you to get right. And so I'm going to be that voice. I'm always going to be that voice. That's going to be like, yeah, nah, this guy, he's got to do better. And I'm going to keep doing that to Donald Trump until November, what is it, 2nd or 7th, whatever the day it is, because I want Trump to go out and say, like, white people have a right to organize collectively in their racial interests. When he does that, then I'll be, okay, all right, I got to give this guy, you know, all right, finally. But even then, I'll be like, we made him do it. So,
well, and yeah. I'm going to tag on just very briefly, Mark, there is, we're having more influence than you know, my friend. But I will just say that, I think for some of the people who are, you know, maybe some who are in the chat live right now and some who will watch in replay and who are not quite getting this, there, you know, there might be two factors, and it's okay. One might be that you have a really low IQ, and the other might be that emotionally, you have a really low emotional EQ. And the thing is that you have a couple things to measure here. It's not just one thing. You're looking, you know, the folks who are not getting this are they're looking at Trump like their dad who said he was going to take him to Disney World and then he didn't. All dad did was promise us and then he didn't come through. So now dad's making another promise. I mean, this is like a really infantile way. And so they're just going to absolutely reject. You have Trump is in one container to measure with one metric. And then you have another metric of how this lands on the population and how it can be used. Then you have another metric of how exactly has Trump come to this position. There are many different ways to measure what has happened yesterday, what Trump said. And by the way, I mean, he also said when Catherine Herridge was talking about, let's see, it was about the Confederate flag is a painful reminder, and this is all anti-white narrative, has nothing to do with reality. Painful reminder of slavery for many Americans. Trump cut in and said, he just cut right in and said, people love it. Then he said, quote, I know people that the Confederate flag and I know people that like the Confederate flag and they're not thinking about slavery. I look at NASCAR. You go to NASCAR and you see those flags all over the place. They stopped it. I just think it's freedom of speech. Whether it's a Confederate flag or Black Lives Matter, anything else you want to talk about, it's freedom of speech. So that is exact contrary. So we can measure these if you're going to be, and we all are demonstrating it here, that we have the nuance of thought, the intelligence to evaluate, and not only that, but look for the opportunities that become available to us as a consequence of an environment that has caused a politician to have to take steps that he normally would not otherwise take. And so that's what I think where folks are not getting this. If you, and when it comes to, you know, loving Trump or not, you in our view in Going Free, you don't love or like any politician or love or like any content producer for white well-being. You love the outcomes that serve white well-being. The moment we don't serve white well-being, you don't like us. Because if you get into this, we've picked a person that we like, and we're going to go with him or her, whatever they say, then that's when the money people come in behind the scenes and they press people into service. And suddenly you have the interests of some little state in some other part of the world that's being fed instead of our well-being. But I pass it back so we can move on with the conversation.
Well, we have one other big thing to talk about tonight, and this is more Anglo-centric. Now, I'm sure both of you have heard about this, and I've talked about this. Of course, Jason's heard about this because we've talked about this on this show. A good few weeks ago, Black Lives Matter supporters marauded through the city of Bristol and pulled down the statue of Edward Colston. Now, Edward Colston, he at one point was a slave trader, but he was also a philanthropist, and he donated huge sums of money to the city of Bristol to develop the city of Bristol and to make life better for people living in the city of Bristol. Now, these Black Lives Matter supporters marauded through the city, they pulled down his statue, and they threw it in the river. Now, today, and the statue hasn't been replaced, those caught on camera doing it were just being given a caution for American viewers. A caution is a slap on the wrist. It means the police gave you a talking to, and the talking to is on record. It's not a actual serious punishment. But after this, an artist, in inverted commas, has made a statue of a black woman doing a black power salute and has taken it to Bristol and attached it to the plinth that the Colston statue was on. And, of course, the media are absolutely loving this. No, they are gloating about it. They're going crazy. This is what they wanted. So now what you've got is not just a destruction of our history, but our history being replaced. And, of course, we know that Black Lives Matter is a Marxist organization, but this is classic Maoist policy. Destroy what went before, destroy history. It also happened in Cambodia under Pol Pot. Destroy everything that's gone before and then replace it with something new. Pol Pot called it Year Zero. The idea was to destroy everything that had gone before and start again with something completely new. So there was no history, no culture, no tradition. They were starting again. And this is essentially what Black Lives Matter wished to do. Phase one was to destroy our statues. And I've said this many times, actually, that our enemies are very good at destroying something. And when they destroy something or remove something, they create a vacuum. But as soon as that vacuum is created, they are very able and all too ready to fill that vacuum with something negative. So they destroy a positive, create a vacuum, and fill the vacuum with a negative. So we go from having a positive to having a negative. And that's what this is all about. But I've got to say, if I was living closer to Bristol, I would be taking that down. Bristol is about 3 hours drive for me, and the council have already said they are going to remove it. But if it is legal to remove the Colston statue with only a caution being the punishment, it is, of course, legal to remove this with only a caution being punishment, because otherwise you would have absolute right to of legal recourse, because the way British law works is everything is done on precedent. So once a precedent is set, that precedent has to be adhered to. So if the precedent is set that public property can be pulled down and thrown in the river, then private property placed on that, which is no longer private property once it's been placed there out in the open, because it's just been left, can also be pulled down and thrown in the river. And if I was living in Bristol, I can assure you, I would be there tonight with a few of my more muscular friends who are good at who go to the gym quite a bit and bulk up, and we would be attaching a chain to that statue. We would be pulling it down, and it would be going in the river in a very, very ceremonious way, just as the Colston statue did. But what do you think to this, guys? Because this is obviously the biggest news in the UK today. It's going to dominate the news cycle. And I've just got to add this, because this is something that really annoys me. I'm on Facebook. I barely ever use it. And I used to be subscribed to a page called the Lad Bible. Now, the Lad Bible was one of those light-hearted pages, like, you know, bored guy buys 100 tins of spaghetti and makes a statue or something out of spaghetti, and his friends are like, wow. And it was just silly stories that when you've had a day of being like, oh, God. And sometimes being involved in politics is a bit like that, because you're often bombarded with negatives. You'd go on Facebook and there'd be something on the Lad Bible about a guy doing something stupid, you know, filling his girlfriend's slippers with ice cubes. So when she put them on, she was outraged, and he captured it all on camera. Just nonsense like that, lighthearted stuff. But this attack on us is now everywhere, isn't it? And I noticed the Lad Bible was absolutely glowing with happiness that this statue was put up. But one thing I did notice was all of the top rated comments were outraged, saying, rip it down.
Yep.
Now, I think, just like I think Trump did us a major favor with the white comment, I think Black Lives Matter are doing us a major favor, because people have gone from being, well, yeah, come on, Black Lives do matter, to, come on, don't pull the statues down, you're going too far, to like, what the hell are you doing putting that up? You rip our statues down, then put this rubbish up. And people are changing. And I think, although it annoys me to see the politicization of pages like the Lad Bible, it is amazing to see how people who at the start of this Black Lives Matter thing were probably nominally supportive of it, but now are outraged and want it shutting down. What do you guys think?
If I may, yeah. First of all, I would say going and pulling that statue down, I would never encourage anyone to do anything against law, but clearly it's not, right? It's clearly not. Or if it is, it only carries this certain punishment. Now, an example in America is a guy a couple weeks ago here in Virginia. He was putting up stickers, okay, stickers on stop signs, on telephone poles, something that is done all over America all the time. People do this. There's plenty of anarchists, plenty of communist leftist stickers that are put up in these same locations. He gets caught on camera by some liberals and some snitch, because they have these snitch Facebook groups. Now, this is another reason we know we're in a cultural revolution here. There are people who are being encouraged to just snitch. And again, everybody that is involved in a cultural revolution snitch movement thinks they're a fucking saint. Oh, God, excuse me. Thinks they're a saint. They think they're a freaking saint. They're not. You're a piece of garbage if you do this. Anyway, so this guy, a sticker, and it's not even, it's a QR code that goes to, I didn't even know this, it went to our website. He gets arrested, 3 misdemeanors. He calls the police and says, I've got an attorney. I'm going to turn up at the police station on Monday. And they're like, okay, that's fine. An hour later, 7 police cars surrounding his house, announcing he must surrender peacefully over the megaphone. So he's like, oh, what the hell is going on? He goes out, calls his lawyer. He's like, look, you got to go. You got to go with them. Like, you got no choice. And they arrest him. They book him. They turn him loose, give him a court date. What the hell was that all about? That was about sending the message. And the thing is, this is incredibly disproportionate punishment, because there's people that will put up an anarchist sticker and they'll get no punishment. So I think that on some level, I don't encourage people to be sort of the victim of that double standard, but when that double standard comes out, it makes things very clear. So if someone were to go out and tear down that statue and get the book thrown at them, which is what we can talk about what's ideal. We can talk about what's really going to happen. What's really going to happen if a private citizen or a group of guys, white guys, goes out and tears that statue down, they're going to go to jail. And I'm not saying I like it. I'm just saying this is my prediction of what will happen. And they will be mercilessly pilloried in the press. Their families will probably lose their jobs. They will lose their jobs. They might do jail time. They might get hit with heavy fines. This is what would happen. And because of this, white people are on notice. You are a second-class citizen. And we need to help white people come to this realization, because a lot of people don't. It's a difficult and it's a hard thing. You don't want to see it. You know, I talked to some people I know, older relatives or friends, older relatives, things like that, that they're still like they're dumbfounded. They're flabbergasted with what's going on. They can't believe this. The idea that there is this just massive and systematic double standard that disadvantages them at every interaction with the state and with other people and with corporations. They are at a disadvantage in every interaction. So this idea, now there's been an idea of racism that's been sold to us. It's called privilege plus power. Well, if that's the metric of racism, white people cannot possibly be racist, because black people have privilege and power over us. Hispanics have privilege and power over us. In the UK, certainly Muslims and Asians, as you call them over there, which we call them, we just call them Arabs or Muslims here. They have power over us. Jews have power over us. Every other group has privilege and power over us to the point, like a black person can point a phone at you in a parking lot and be like, he said something racist. And boom, there goes your job and possibly your wife's job. You know what I mean? So again, I think though, on some level, it's tragic and terrible for the people that it happens to. But if it does happen to people, we have to support them. We have to give them money, legal funds, moral support. If this kind of thing happens to people that find themselves in these situations, of course, you know, this pregnant woman who is threatened by these three rowdy, really aggressive black women in the parking lot last week. I think we all saw that video. She ended up pulling a gun to defend herself legitimately and her unborn child. She couldn't even use the internet to raise money for her legal bills, while Antifa people who are rioting, breaking windows, tearing down statues, attacking people, looting stores, they get $750,000 raised for their bail fund on GoFundMe. So this is a massive and basically it's inexplicable, other than there is a systematic bias against white people in both of our countries. And of course, our countries are intimately linked. So white people need to be made aware of this. And I think on some level, one of the ways to make them aware is like, okay, I'm going to show you how bad this is and take this statue down. And of course, like, you know, people do what you will, but this is theoretical what I'm saying, you know? So I think we all understand that though, but you don't even actually need to do it. You can say to a white person, well, you know how that statue, that white guy that had been standing for however many years, decades, hundreds of years, whatever, you know, that was torn down by these rabid anarchists and blacks and Muslims, I suppose. I don't know if they're how much they're participating in the protests over there. You know, that was torn down and thrown in the river, and nobody got any punishments for this act of public vandalism. You think you can go tear down that statue of a black woman? What do you think is going to happen? They'll know immediately. And the fact they know immediately is actually why Donald Trump had to say what he had to say. They have made it. Now, one of the chief weapons, I think, chief anti-white weapons of liberalism, neoliberalism, not in terms of like liberals like Democrats or labor, but liberalism as a system, as an ideology, as a practical way of ruling a society. Its chief weapons is depoliticization, making people more interested in their personal hobbies, their private life than they are in politics. Well, they're making that impossible. White people can't check out. You know, on some level, I think there's one faction of the elite that's like, we want white people checking out. What are you people doing? And you can't check out as a white person anymore. You got to check in and understand any interaction you have with a black person or a non-white person in any walk of life, corporate, government, private, your life, your livelihood is up for grabs. And when people realize that, there's going to be a revolution. There has to be.
I'll just underscore exactly what Mike would say. I agree completely. Just a couple of points that I thought were really important. Number one, we like to say, don't rely on the fiction of the law when it comes to us. Yeah. Because the law will not protect you, ladies and gentlemen. They will dilate it to send you to jail. Our prisons in the United States, and it's probably the exact same way in the UK, are full of political prisoners.
My personal friends.
Precisely. So don't rely on the fiction of the law, but do use the double standard, as Mike is saying, when you talk to friends, family, and strangers to bring them over to going free, do use the double standard to open their eyes.
Make it explicit. I'm sorry for interrupting. Make it explicit, because that gives fence sitters no way out. Sorry, go ahead, Jason. I'm sorry.
No, you're precisely right. And that's exactly what should be said, because we want to be bringing people over as quickly as we possibly can, especially while the soil is getting riper with things like the double standard of them being able to pull down the statues of our heroes and throw them in the river, which, by the way, is an effigy of that is the precursor to drowning actual white people.
Yes.
I mean, they drown the statue in the United States. I'm sure Mike has seen, they have raised statues of white men by the throat in the United States.
They've hung them.
Yes, they've hung them. So that is that's an effigy of hanging the white man. It's the precursor to actually hanging us for being white. So, and then the other thing is, you know, this dilation of the law, this is something that we have to, for especially for the younger folks who think, well, it's just gotten bad. No, anti-whiteism has been bad the whole time. They've always taken it as far as law and the public tolerance will allow. And now we see that anti-whites in charge of law will order police to get on a knee. And so law will just about allow them to do everything. And the public is getting so scared that they will just about allow them to do anything. So 20 years ago, and maybe Mike remembers this or has learned of this, 20 years ago in National Alliance, we had teenagers being arrested for putting up National Alliance stickers on chain link fences. The one most conspicuous, which is totally outrageous, was like outside of a factory in the middle of nowhere, chain link fence that faced nothing. Yeah. And they went and they arrested these teenagers for putting a little sticker, you know, on the vertical post of the chain link fence. So, and again, just as Mike said, you could put up a sticker that says kill the white race and it's going to be fine. It is totally acceptable within the anti-white morality. So the thing to do is not to just sit there and say, oh, you know, by golly, this isn't fair. No, the thing to do is to talk to your friends, family, and strangers, to share the two standards of how things are held in this country, point to what Donald Trump just said, and invigorate them, animate them, galvanize them to get active in reclaiming our destiny. And I'll pass it back to Mark for the next story.
Well, I think that actually takes us over to the Super Chats. We're about halfway through the show. There's still another hour left. Please, please make sure you share the stream, because we've got great numbers again. Our numbers tonight, again, rival the biggest stream we ever did on YouTube. So we're clocking in with bigger numbers on DLive than we ever did on YouTube, which is absolutely mind-blowing and shows just how much we were being suppressed on that platform.
Yeah.
So I'm absolutely over the moon to see so many people here tonight. And there's still chance to ask questions. There's still chance to send super chats. So please do make sure you do that before the end of the show. And we're going to start here with one that follows on perfectly from the last topic. And it's from Serena JB. She sent £3. Thank you very much, Serena. And said, how long do you think the BLM replacement of the Edward Colston statue will stay up? Very sorry that Mike's Twitter account got deleted. Hopes he comes back soon. Well, thank you, Serena. Now, I think the statue of the BLM statue will stay up as long as they protect it, or as long as the police protect it. The only way that thing is staying up is if people protect it 24/7, be it the state or be it BLM, Antifa, white anarchists, whoever. If it's not protected, it's coming down. And like I said, to see normies on the Lad Bible going crazy with outrage over this tells you it's not just the kind of thing that we want to pull down. Now, one thing that I've got to say is a few weeks ago, a young lad called Jake Heppel caused absolute outrage when he got a White Lives Matter banner to fly over the Etihad Stadium in Manchester. Now, that guy...
That was fantastic.
It was fantastic. But the thing you've got to remember is Jake Heppel isn't somebody that you would say was politically active. He's not a member of a dissident party. He's not an organizer. He's a lad that was annoyed with what he saw
in
action. And I would say that if I lived in Bristol, as I said, me and some of the lads would be going and pulling that thing down tonight. But I would say when we got there, it might already be gone. And it's the kind of thing that if it's not protected, normal lads, lads like Jake Heppel, lads that might have seen, might have voted BNP back in the day, guys that are just generally anti-immigration or anti-Islam, they're the kind of guys who now would be willing just to go out and pull that down. I think this has caused outrage, and I wasn't expecting it to cause this much outrage, especially not amongst normies. And there is going to be some. What I hate these soy boy people. I hate the fact they've always got one of those really fluffy beards, and their mouth is always wide open, isn't it? As if they're expecting somebody just to like toss a fish in there or something. But you can imagine this fluffy bearded, open gobbed soy boy who writes for the Lad Bible, who, you know, when he clicked enter and uploaded that story, he sat back waiting for all the progressive comments and all the love and all the pro-BLM stuff. And he sat there with his mouth wide open, his eyes sticking out on stalks, just not being able to believe what his comment section looks like. And You know that's the case. There were going to be liberals tonight who thought this was the next stage of the plan and it was all going to run smoothly, and it isn't. The normies don't like this. This isn't just the scary white nationalists talking about it. This is your average punter coming home from work, you know, walking in, firing up Facebook and putting an angry face on the Lad Bible. What do you guys think? How long will this statue live?
Well, I can't speak to how long the statue will stay there, but I can say that I think that we shouldn't draw a distinction between ourselves and these normie whites. Like, we are out here as sort of like the tip of the spear, if you will. Like, we are just the ones that sensed the developments and saw where things were going and understood the logic of the system and where it was leading early. And a lot of people rationally didn't do it because they have family and job and kids and whatever other struggles of daily life to do. Or those of us who are, I mean, that's why you have sort of a division of labor in society. Like, some people do intellectual work and it's our job to see the stuff and tell other people. So the fact that we're just being proven right, it just shows that we were right. Like, our analysis 5 years ago was right. This was unthinkable 5 years ago, but here we are today. So, you know, similar to that guy that flew that White Lives Matter banner over, I guess, a football match. A guy in America flew a Confederate flag over a NASCAR a couple weeks ago, and he said, because everyone's talking about defunding the police, he says, defund NPR, because I guess NPR, which is the very elitist left-wing publicly funded radio, of course, you know, people that don't agree with that crap have to fund it in America because it's, you know, it's fair. you know, as they say. And of course, if they ever let a conservative on NPR, you better believe he's like a fire-breathing pro-war Israel hawk. And that's the only type of conservative ever allowed on that channel. He's a reasonable, you know, the reasonable kind. Not those crazy people that want to bring the troops home and stay out of the Middle East. Not those crazy people that want to cut immigration. Not those racists that think, you know, white people shouldn't be like exterminated. And I'm not getting extreme with this, but you know, somebody that wants war all over the Middle East, that's the kind of sober, reasonable voice we want on NPR. But you know, so I would say, yeah, I think that the on some level, like, what's happening now is horrible and horrifying, but I'm excited, I'm invigorated, and I feel like on fire, like I haven't for a long time. Like, I'll be honest, 2019 was a bit of a doldrum year. It was. For me, at least. It was a bit of a, you know, it was kind of a kind of flat. Things didn't get the nothing, you know, it was kind of like, okay, we have the same. It's kind of a status quo year carried over from 2018, very similar. 2017, of course, very exciting year. And he had a very bad year of 2018. He kind of had a doldrum year of 2019. Now here we are, this crazy thing is going on. And I think that by there's an overstepping, and I think there are people amongst the elite that would like to dial it back, but the problem is, because of the logic of the system, even those that would like to dial it back don't have a good way to express that without being accused of being racist themselves. I mean, when you create a sort of a rabid group of people that are ideological, like these anarchists that are out there, these anti-white antifas, and a lot of the intellectuals that they've deployed to the universities, these anti-white intellectuals that run these struggle sessions with white people. Like, there's this woman, wrote this book, White Fragility. I'm sure that Jason is familiar. Robin DiAngelo. And I've even noticed there's some people criticizing her by being like, look, Rob, if you do this, if you bring white people into a room and, like, say an office that's mixed race office, right? Whites and some people of other races, blacks and Hispanics, you bring them in, and you just, like, basically tell the blacks and Hispanics, you should hate those white people. They're going to be, they're terrible people, and every interaction with them is them trying to, like, get one over on you or express power over you or something like that. All those white people are going to feel attacked, and they're going to start to feel collectively attacked. And that's been what I've been wanting. I've been like, I actually would love Robin DiAngelo to go ahead and give a seminar to every office in America. Do it.
She spoke at Congress and she was paid with our tax dollars. Yeah, let's have her go to every single office.
Because it's actually been shown that these types of things backfire. Because when look, you can't, there's a lot of things you can do to white people. There's a lot of mental and psychological tricks that can be played. But if you just openly attack people because of their race, it's like people are going to eventually be like, wait a second, what the hell? And not necessarily everyone, but enough. That's why I say, you know, that guy that flew that White Lives Matter banner, the guy that flew the Confederate flag. These are all our people. They are coming to the same realization that we came 2 years ago because we had time, we had interest, and now we're here to tell these people what is going on. And they're listening. They might not have listened a few years ago, but they are now. There's no way of avoiding it now. I mean, I got to thank these anarchists and the Black Lives Matter people for just making everything clear, putting it all out on the table. Because I don't think we can be, I don't think the white race can be defeated if it's fighting. But the problem for so long, we haven't been fighting.
That's it. I mean, that's what anti-whiteism is all about, is getting us to be white-guilted, white-shamed, so that we lower our defenses and allow ourselves to be victimized. Very quickly to the statue, I'll just say, everybody knows I grew up blue-collar family and have worked white and blue-collar jobs my whole life. And I took a look at the statue. It looks like it has through bolts in the base and very skinny ankles, though. So the statue doesn't actually need to have to come all the way down. A single person, and I absolutely wouldn't do this or recommend anyone
do it. Theoretical. This is theoretical.
Yes, this is totally theoretical. And I would not do it or recommend anybody do this. But some synthetic rope that can hold a few hundred pounds, I mean, maybe 1,000 pounds synthetic rope, and a single come along that you could tie off to the base of a tree somewhere. One person could bring that thing bent over at the angles, at the ankles, all the way over. And that would be better than even it disappearing and falling into the river. But certainly
put that on display.
Don't do either. Yes. Whatever you do, don't do either. But I pass it back to Mark.
Well, remember, because of COVID, you have to wear a mask in public. I'm just saying it's illegal not to. So I'm just saying.
Two words.
Throwing that out
angle
there.
Grinder. Anyway, swiftly moving on. Bertha Mason gave £10. Thank you very much, Bertha. Thank you for being so kind and supportive. Well, thank you very much for saying that. And people who do email me know that I always go out of my way to help people who email me with advice or getting people in touch. I had a lovely lady email me today from Australia, and I put her in touch with a group in Australia that I know. So I do my best to help anyone that emails. So thank you very much for the super chat. Oregon Sam Hain gave $5. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, any thoughts on the Bristol Black Lives Matter statue replacement? I think we've done that one to death.
I think so we already covered that.
Definitely got your money's worth on that super chat, mate. Junta Molinari gave $10. Thank you very much. He said, a recent article by the BBC pointed out that 183 out of 195 countries have a fertility rate below the replacement level. The only region in the world with an above replacement level fertility rate will be Africa. Niger will go from being the least densely populated to the most densely populated in the history of mankind. Well, that is very interesting. I think what you're seeing here is a replacement of the best with the worst. That would be my analysis. I don't think we need any further comment on that. We've got a lot of super chats, so we're going to power on. JP gave $5 and said, love the show. Keep doing God's work. Well, thank you very much, JP. It's very much appreciated. Marty Morosley gave £10. Thank you very much. And said, hello, Mark. Any update on the status of Patriotic Alternative as a political party? Any update from the Electoral Commission? The Electoral Commission have stopped answering my emails. I'm trying to tie them down to exactly what is wrong with the Constitution. I will email them again tomorrow. I want an answer in writing to exactly what we have to change before we resubmit. But at the moment, we have several very big plans going on, and there are no elections for a good while yet. So do not worry, my friends. JC Starling gave $10. Thank you very much. Hail Mark. Hail Jason. Long live Patriotic Alternative. I love white people. Well, so do we, and we love you. Thank you for the super chat. ES gave $3. Thank you very much. August the 9th, not August the 8th. 88 sounds good to me. No, it is definitely August the 9th, because that is Indigenous Peoples Day. But, Mike... Can I rope you and Jason in on this? Will you guys do a White Lives Matter banner drop on August the 9th and join us to help us in our attempt to basically get White Lives Matter trending on Twitter?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not on Twitter, so I can't help with that. But I think there's probably people in America that would absolutely be willing to do that. There's probably networks of people. I mean, there's people that are doing banner drops around America of this sort all the time. And just the media, of course, just hushes it. If they can't arrest them and humiliate them, they will just hush it up as soon as possible. But I don't personally have a banner, but I'm sure that there might be people out there working on such a thing.
That is good news. And Jason, obviously, if you say no to this, we'll all be fine.
I actually have already been telling people to contact you and Laura to get involved, not just in the US, but elsewhere as well in the world.
Well, thank you. Sam Sheridan gave 10 US dollars and said, hello again, Moike. Good to hear from you on PWR again. I've been meaning to get into Bitcoin for ages and will do for you lads. You lot have been one of the biggest political changes for me in the last 2 years. Also, sorry to hear another one of your Twitter accounts got wrecked. R.I.P. in Ranch. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah. The ranch thing, don't worry about that. It's an inside joke. But yeah, look, I mean, I'm, again, getting shut down is whatever. Like, it's happened to me so many times and I'm still here and I'm actually bigger. We are bigger than we've ever been. This is the, they thought after Charlottesville, we were all going to crumple and disappear. But we doubled our audience after Charlottesville and we're doubling it now. So there you go.
That is good to hear.
You can't just kill a race. Like, you can't do it. There might be a lot of people that are extremely damaged, and there are in our countries that are extremely damaged, but that does, there are going to be people that push back. It's inevitable. It's a law of nature. You can't stop it. So it's happening.
Well, no, you definitely deserve the success, Mike. I've been on several of the shows, three of the different shows on your network. I've been on TDS a few times. I've been on FTN, and I've also been on TASOB, which is excellent. And I really enjoy joining you guys. Your network's superb, and you really deserve all the success that you're having at the moment. So keep it up. I'm sure it's all going to go a lot bigger as you get closer to that presidential.
Yeah, and you know, it's a mixed blessing, because with the success comes work, attention, and then scrutiny by the enemy, which can be very difficult to deal with. And they will do a lot of things in their power to come after you. Some things that are overt, some things that are hidden behind the scenes, some things you can't talk about that you just have to deal with. A lot of stuff. But it's, you know, the thing is, I don't think I would have picked another life. Like, if you think about it, what's your life for? I mean, this is sort of philosophical, and I don't give myself airs, but seriously, what are you living for? You got one life. Do you want what you live so you could be unmolested home on your computer? You know, with you collecting money to buy things with? I mean, for some people, that seems to be good enough. But I don't think that's good enough for a true white Aryan man. I don't think that's good enough for him. He wants a struggle. He wants a fight. So let's have one. I mean, metaphorically, politically.
Thank you. Rory London gave $5 and said, I think European nationalism is a better option given the limited success of uniquely British movements. We could unite with comrades in France, Germany, Italy, etc., and we'd have enough manpower for substantial change maintaining our race. Well, thank you for that, Rory. Although I do slightly disagree. I think everything we do has to start locally. I think it's always been a bit of a failing of nationalists to think big before they've even got something going that's small. I've attended meetings before of five or six people. There's been somebody in the meeting saying, right, we need somebody to reach out to German nationalists, somebody to reach out to French nationalists. We need a group going in Italy. I need the numbers of people in America. We want a transatlantic group. It's going to be fantastic. And you haven't even got a single group in the UK yet. But you're talking about this massive... What nationalists need to do is get developed locally. Then they need to grow. And that's what we're doing here. PA is developing itself at local level. We are now having local meetings in London, the southeast, the southwest, the West Midlands, the north. We're having meetings in Scotland. People are doing activism all over the country. It's fantastic. We've got lots of events coming up, most notably August the 9th. And I do now get emails from people all over Europe saying, we're watching what you're doing. We're thinking it's great. Could we work together potentially in the future? Would you be willing, when the lockdown's over, to come and speak at one of our conferences? And the answer is yes. And I think when you've proved yourself locally, that's when the international links start to grow with other groups that have proved themselves in their location. I think suggesting one giant group across a continent would be almost impossible, especially in Europe, to arrange. And we... we are best just working locally and growing from there. It's got to be a grassroots movement that grows from the ground up. I don't think we can impose a European-wide movement. I think that would be too much work and almost impossible to achieve. Does anyone have any takes on that before we move on? Because the next question is for Mike.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. You know, we 75% of our traffic comes from America, and there are these informal groups of supporters throughout America. Of course, we have them in Canada, we have them in Sweden, we have them in the UK, we have them in Australia. Those are our main countries, but this all happened organically, and there's communication and friendships between all those groups. But everybody, it's like, it doesn't need to be like we start out, okay, we get a rep in Sweden or whatever. That seems to me, like you said, putting the cart before the horse. Just start putting the ideas out there. Naturally, other people with these ideas in other white countries are going to be our allies, and those with the most compatible ideas will gravitate towards each other, as we do right here. But nobody started like, okay, you know, us two here, you know, you, Patriotic Alternative, and TR. No one said like, okay, these guys are going to go together. It's like, no, we just found each other because we are just compatible. And I, you know, and you know, Canada and the US, it's like, what's the difference, right? But you know, so we have a lot of Canadian people. The English speaking world is big with us, and then Sweden, of course. But you know, this all happened organically just because we're here. I think that you're going to start to see in the coming months more organized, not just online content, not just informal groups, but more organized pro-white efforts happening in North America. It's coming. Just telling you that.
Yeah, and I just really quickly, Mark, and we'll be able to keep rolling along. I just want to say that the kind of guys that usually suggest these things, these premature things, are usually premature in other areas of their lives. This is the kind of problem that we face. I've had so many in-face meetings over the years where guys want to get something started, and yeah, it would be just like 3, 4, 5, 8 guys from a county or several counties, and then immediately they're talking about where we need locations around the world and drawing up grand, you know, statements to release to the public and everything. And I'm just like, we are 4 guys. Can we just start leafleting? Can we just like start trying to reach out to the community here? But I'll pass it back to Mark so we can keep rolling.
Thank you. Marty Morosi, this one's for Mike. Marty gave £5. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, one for Mike E. Having been a TRS paywall cuck for years, I am a big fan. Do you see any presidential candidates post 2020 who will explicitly refer to white people and white interests regardless of who wins between Biden and Trump?
You mean current people that would be contenders now? Well, I think watching the GOP is interesting. Now, the GOP is an incredibly corrupt organization. But I think that they are, for lack of a better term, and I'm sensitive using this word with people from the UK, they're grooming people. They are grooming people, like I would say Josh Hawley and Marco Rubio right now are being kind of set up to potentially follow along in the footsteps of Trump, where the powers that be, we all know who that means, are trying to set up somebody as a sort of a representative of kind of a civic nationalist, right? They want kind of some of the stuff that some of the issues that Trump raised, some of the issues that white nationalists are raising, without any explicitly pro-white stuff and kind of, you know, undermining it at the key points, but making it sort of credible. And the weapon that they use is like, well, here's this major compromise we want you to make, but we're offering you in exchange some kind of credibility, some kind of access to the GOP, to donors, to possibilities of elections and things like that. I'd say Josh Hawley is somebody to watch. I think a lot of people like him and he said good things. But again, I just, you know, I don't want to be that rat at the garden party, but I always urge skepticism and really you got it. And I also think with the GOP, if you want them to be based, you have to withdraw your support and be critical, because if you're uncritical towards them, if you don't make demands of them, then you won't get anything, even the nods and the rhetoric. You won't even get that. So with pressure on Trump over the last year or so by his peeling away of support because of lack of action, it's put him in this position where he has to do this really inflammatory rhetoric that's very much against the grain of what other elites want him to do. And I think we should push those kind of buttons and try and, again, we can't count on the GOP. Let's put it out there. That is not an organization we can count on. That is an anti-white organization, in my opinion. However, we can push them because they have to nominally kind of support us. And I think we have to get over the hump of conservatism generally, because conservatism tells you, okay, everyone out there is organized racially, blacks, Hispanics, Jews, other groups, Muslims organized religiously, effectively racially from our perspective. So the answer to that problem, and that's creating a big problem. The answer to that problem, according to conservatism, what's the answer? The answer is no, we should all be individuals under the Constitution. Well, my answer is no. White people have a right to organize racially as well. And in fact, that's the whole point of liberalism. That's the whole point of the system, is to sabotage that. That's what the GOP does. That's what conservatism does. That's what libertarianism does, is it tells whites, oh, all these people organize against you, all these forces arrayed against you. Well, the answer is if everybody acts systematically in individualistic ways. But why should blacks do that? Why should Jews do that? Why should Mexicans do that? There's no reason. And the system doesn't give them any incentives to do it. It gives them incentives to do the opposite. So what I'm saying is, by doing that, it's giving us the incentive to do it. And I think that the GOP is going to increasingly be boxed in, where they have to at least do these candidates, Trump-like candidates, where they're going to be making this rhetoric. But again, then behind the scenes, all kinds of compromises will be made. But again, once we're in that situation, we're being kind of handed an advantage there, where we can really press. And I think this fracture point, this fault line amongst the elites, because there's elites that do not want them to do this. There's a faction that says, "No, do not reference white people in any way. Do not give them any moral support." And there's another one's like, "Well, we can just do it, get power, and then stab them in the back." We have to really push here and just make sure, you know, at some point, if enough white people just want political power for our race, then it's just going to have to happen. And that's what ultimately the goal is. So I think I think Josh Hawley would be the one to watch, is the one I think they're grooming to be the next sort of Trump-like figure, or maybe even Tucker Carlson, who I like, but I think could potentially be a dangerous person if he is sort of co-opted, because he's got a lot of credibility with white people. White people really like him. He's getting more and more popular. So I think we should watch him. I like Tucker. I do like him more than almost anybody associated with the Republican establishment. But that's all I really have to say on that.
Okay, we've got another super chat from Rory London. He gave $3. Thank you very much. He said, "I think most public outreach should place emphasis on breeding and getting women to start having 10 or so children again." I'm not sure if that's a joke.
Is that serious? I mean,
I'm not sure if that's a joke. If that's not a joke, I'm sorry, but
that's kind of spurgy, dude. Like, here's the thing.
Mike answer this.
All right. Like, look, I don't even know. Like, giving women advice has never been my thing, but you know, I don't know. I feel like there's guys that have a feel for it and guys that don't, and those that know, and those that don't. I don't know what to do for you. I mean, I could try and help, but it's not my primary role here. I think, though, that if you tell women, "We just want you to be like breeding farms," that's, you got to give women something more than that. You got to give women, like, "We're going to give you, we want you to be mothers. We want you to have security. We want you to have family. We want you to have safety, community, love." That's better. You just need to pump out 10 kids like that. It's not necessarily a good buy-in for women. Buy-in for women, what are women like? Safety, security, comfort. Let's be honest, that's their role. I mean, they are born to be mothers, and so this is what you have to offer them. You can't just tell, you have to make demands upon them to have a bunch of kids if you're not offering them that safety and that security. That's your job as a man. Now, you call me a feminist or something like that for saying that, but it's not real. It's just the natural sexual roles. You as a man provide a woman with safety, security, comfort, and love, and she gives it back to you. So, and she gives you children. That's the deal. That's nature's deal. So you have to give them your part of the bargain. And I think that as a movement, that's what men should be striving for. Make women want you to be the father of their kids. How about that? Before you start making demands on women, you become a man that a woman is like, I want him to have my kids.
I think we have to now label this argument about this like womb. We have to label it the breed sow argument.
So, we call it the breeding stump argument on TRS.
All they want is a breed sow. Yeah, so yeah, ridiculous, but very well said, Mike. Mark?
Yeah, I don't really know what to say. it's not really been the best. I don't think that's the best chat up line. So, hey,
yeah,
I'm the other side of the bar, and I'd really like you to join Patriotic Alternative. We've got some great offers on at the moment. You having 10 of my children in the next decade is one of them. You know, I'm not really sure that's assailable.
Well, did you have 10 Irish twins, just kid after kid?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, if they are one of those women that just perpetually has twins, it could be done even sooner, couldn't it? You could.
Oh, no. I'm talking about Irish twins. They're all 9 months apart.
Yeah, I think we need. I hope my missus isn't listening to this.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean. That's actually just. I like Irish people. That's just a fun, loving joke. I'm serious.
She's downstairs quivering at the thought of pumping another 9 out now. we're having enough trouble with one little monster.
I also want to say one more thing about this. It's actually kind of serious. I think that there's a bit of an autistic element of people that focus on. Now, I'm not saying having kids isn't important, because it is, but it's not like if white people aren't awakened to fight for political power as a race, it doesn't really matter. Because that's actually as important. And when that happens, you will see the birth rates go up. The reason why birth rates are down is despair. White people don't see a future. There is a, let's be honest. I mean, there is a conspiracy against us. It sounds, oh God, tinfoil hat. No, but it can't be any more clear based on the events of the past few months, at least. So why aren't white people having children? They don't see a good future for their children. So one, we have to demand political power and fight for political power. And when we get it, create a feeling amongst whites that we will have a future. Then the children will come. So I think that, just saying like, well, we just focus on breeding now. I think that we should focus on power now. We still have a lot of people. There's 190 million white people in the United States. That's enough to fight for power. Let's be honest. That's plenty. So I think we need to be fighting for power, for representation, for advocacy, and for a seat at the table, and then ultimately the chairman's seat at the table. And that's what we want. And with that, we will create the conditions that will lead to a flourishing of our people and more births and things like that. You can't kind of just start with the births. It's part of a whole package. And I will say this, though, that once people do get into our movement and do get involved, and women too, and more women are getting involved now, actually. It used to be an all dudes thing, but I've seen the percentages of women increasing recently. And I've actually seen, there was like a joke in TRS circles over here. It was like the TRS baby boom. So many people have had kids. Like I go to parties and gatherings now, and there's little babies everywhere. And I love it. It's great. It's such a great feeling. And you know who loves that feeling of being in a big family gathering, a lot of kids around? Women. Women love it. That's what we have to offer women. You want women to buy in? Be like, listen, we can give you a great feeling of family and comfort and joy around the holidays, around the summertime, have kids run around in the grass, and everything is great. Like, that's what we all want. Like, that's really my ideology, frankly. But, that's what we all want. So, it's not just like breeding. It's just a very autistic way of looking at it. It just doesn't take the human factor into consideration. And I think, we need to have power. We need to be able to create the environments we want to create for our people. And then the children follow. Not to say that it's not important, because it's already happening. Nationalists amongst themselves are already creating these communities. And so it's kind of it can't just be, oh, we just have to pump out kids. Because what does it matter if you just pump out a bunch of kids into an anti-white world and you don't have them armed with any ideology or any community? Doesn't matter. It's not going to help.
Good points. Unknown Californian gave $25 and said, well, thank you very much. Very generous donation. Said, Mike is the juggernaut. He is unrivaled and unstoppable. My favorite thought leader. Mike, please do a strike and Mike on Dr. William Pierce. He died in July 2002.
Okay. I mean, we've talked about Pierce many times. I don't know if we've never done like a focus just on him, but we you know, certainly I know of him. I've read his books, varying opinions on some of those, but we've talked about Pierce a lot. I mean, we'll talk about him more in the future. I mean, he's a very relevant figure, and he may, you know, one thing I said about William Pierce, when all this kicked off around May 25th, I believe, when this really, this Bolshevik revolution kicked off, it's like, you know who actually predicted this better than anybody? It was Pierce. I mean, read the Turner Diaries. You'll be like, whoa, this is my life. It's crazy. I have one criticism of William Pierce, though, as an author, not as anything else, is that I think that his books, while I enjoy them, they kind of start in the middle. The organization already exists. When you start the turn, it's already there. The hard work has kind of been done. And I'm saying we need a path to that hard work. And there's another guy that kind of laid that out. We don't have to talk about that now, though.
Well, I always found with Pierce's books, and I don't want to get into a huge debate over this, but
our uncle kind of laid that for us. Sorry.
He sort of wrote the opening sections of his books in a very, very detailed way. And he seemed, I just got the feeling that throughout his books, he seemed to get bored writing them to the end. And he wrote these very, very detailed passages that opened up the narrative, which were in great detail about individuals, events, and they were really well fleshed out. Then at the end, he was kind of like, and then the conflict lasted for a little while and somebody flew a plane to the Pentagon and we won. So it's done there, guys.
Yeah.
And those last bits, you kind of felt that he just wanted to get the book finished. And I, as I say, I'm not saying they're terrible books, but...
Well, I think there's a reason for this. I don't know if it's because he got bored. I think it's because it's hard to envision the end of the story. And legitimately, politically, it is hard to see the real path. And I think sometimes the ends of his books weren't very plausible, frankly. Certainly Hunter.
Was not. No, that was that one when...
That book, I don't know about using that book as a guide for anything. But, I mean, it's a fun read, don't get me wrong. But it's like, the Turner Diaries is actually a better book than people give it credit for. In the beginning is great, as you said. It's setting up these scenarios that could be happening today. These scenarios could be happening today. And we always knew it was coming to that. But again, I think the criticism is the organization exists. He doesn't tell us how they built it, the hard work of creating it. And then it's kind of like Deus Ex Machina, they win. And so, you know, he understood the problem very well, but like many people, and it's not even his fault. It's something that even all of us have is we aren't quite sure what the end of this ultimately looks like. And that there's nothing wrong with that because it's kind of how politics works. Like you don't necessarily know. You just have to keep pushing and fighting and react. You do have to react to situations as they are, but we always have to have some kind of a vision. And my vision is not necessarily like global white empire. Like that's a little bit ridiculous. My vision is power over our own lives in our own countries. It doesn't necessarily even mean kicking out every person that's not of our race or treating them badly. That's a slander that's used against us. The idea that we want to do that. No, what we do want is sovereignty in our own countries for our people. And guests can come in, but they can't disrupt that sovereignty. That won't be allowed. That's what I see as the end game of this.
Okay, well, we're going to have to speed through these super chats. We've got quite a lot, so this is going to be the quick fire round now. Junta Mominari gave $3. Thank you very much. And he said a statement, Black Lives Matter protests in Japan morphed into anti-Japanese protests and racism in Japan. Same thing happens in Taiwan and South Korea. Anti-racism snuck in as being protests against the US. Thank you. Miss Britannia gave $10 and said, who do you think would win an Oxford Union debate? Mosley Powell or Harold the Deathbringer? Well, I don't know who Harold the Deathbringer is, but I would put my money. No one's beating Sir Oswald Mosley in a debate. That is it. That guy. Who wins the debate? My money's on Mosley. What do you guys think?
I would say so, yeah, because one, he had the English gift for speaking in a very sharp manner. It's very sort of English thing. And he was ideologically on point, and he, what, you know, it's a very difficult thing to overcome. Enoch Powell, what was the other one? Enoch Powell, was that the other one? Who was the other one? Okay. Enoch Powell.
Deathbringer, whoever he is.
Well, he wins by, because he just, like, kills the opponent, right? Like, I'm assuming, right? So he just wins the debate, right? There you go. But Enoch Powell was a bit of a conservative, and I you know, I like the Rivers of Blood speech, but when given the opportunity, he kind of decided not to take it. And I think that that's a bit of, you know, that's, it's sort of a conservative thing to do, where Mosley was not conservative and he had all those rhetorical skills and advantages of, like, you know, the you know, educated Englishmen now, they're very good at this banter type thing. So yeah, I think he would win.
Jason.
I underscore that and we can keep rolling.
Okay. Unknown California gave $3, and this is a question for me. Mark, please also upload to LBRY. It makes it easier for me to download your show and watch it on my TV so my friends and family can see it. Yeah, people often ask me, there's a new site now as well called Brand New Tube, and there's all these different sites, but I find Library, really, LBRY, hard to use, because don't you need like a desktop application to use it or something? Anyway, I am considering uploading to other platforms, but it is very time consuming. You upload to BitChute, then you have to upload to LBRY, then to something else, then to something else. Before you know where you are, you're uploading to a dozen different platforms, and some of these platforms only get 10 or so views, and it's difficult work. I'll consider it, but thank you. And I've also got a huge back catalog that I need to upload as well, which would take hours. And at the moment, I am up to my neck in admin work too. But thank you. I will take that on board. Grim Fan gave $10. Mark, thank you very much. My young twenties recently red-pilled friend is freaking out about compulsory masking. Any thoughts on pushback, given that any white assemblies will be cracked down on? Well, yeah. The thing with the masks, that's up to you. I mean, in the UK, they're going to be fining people £100 for not wearing them. You can get medical exemption, but I don't know. I mean, with the masks, are you going to be wearing yours? Do you guys have any idea for pushback at the moment? You know, we're pushing back on different things, and we're really pushing back on the BLM.
I think it's an irrelevant issue. I think it's a fake issue that is thrown up there to capture this guy's feeling like he wants to do something against the system, and he's going to go for the anti-mask. Go again. Go for the hard thing. Wear your mask and just be pro-white. Like, actually, I'm happy to go out in public with a mask so the freaking Zog can't see my face. You know, like, why should I look this gift horse in the mouth? Nah, dude, this pandemic mask crap, I'm not commenting on the reality or the fakeness of this disease. It seems that maybe people are dying, but it wasn't as bad as they were predicting as the most. This is not the relevant political issue. Also, like, I don't know about in the UK. In America, there are mask rules in effect in different localities. I have not felt the mask jackboot police with their boot on my neck. I do feel like, you know, anarchists and blacks, and frankly, police collaborating with them on racial issues are far more of a force suppressing me than this mask crap. The fact, oh, you have to, oh, sorry, you can't come into 7-Eleven unless you put the mask. Oh, wow, I'm so oppressed. It just seems like a dumb, it's meant to appeal to conservative and libertarian priors and get people going back down those rabbit holes. I just think it's stupid. And honestly, I'll be honest now, you might not want to take this advice, because here's how I handle that. I would just call your friend a dumbass and tell him to stop being stupid and care about something important. Sometimes just being straight with people is the best. Just make fun of them. Like, dude, are you really one of these boomer dumbasses that doesn't see the world for what it is? Like, yeah, come on, man. Our race is under attack and you care about this mask thing. What are you, InfoWars? Is that what it is? That's probably what it is.
We've got to really speed on because we've got a lot of super chats, but I just want to say this. We need to push back against the anti-white stuff. I agree with Mike. We've got to stay on target. The masks thing.
They're making you wear a mask. Perfect. But now you go pull that statue down. In theory.
Okay. The Thin Red Line gave $5. Very quick answer on these. Could it be that Trump fears the day he is not president anymore and his personal security? I think he might do, but I doubt it very much. I think as an ex-president, he would be fine. He could go anywhere in the world. He would probably, go to some holiday home somewhere, have private security.
He's already, yeah, as a former president, you get the security your whole life, the same level of security. Plus, he has $1 billion.
Yeah, this guy is not going to be wanting for like security when he's not in the old. He's got hotels all over the world. He's got Secret Service protection for him and his whole family. He'll be fine. Plus, he's got friends in high places. If need be, he could go to the Donald Trump Heights, as they call them now, in over there in Syria. Just have a little vacation redoubt over there, overlooking, you know, overlooking Syria.
thank you. Unknown California gave $3, and this is for Mike. A yes, no will suffice. He says, will Mike consider doing his own live stream on DLive?
Yeah, I'll consider it, yeah.
Good, thank you. Rose English gave €5, and this one's for me. Groiping is fun, but we have seen some bad optics. Can we encourage people to go on traditional back-in-the-day historic YouTube videos and lead those people who are melancholy to PA? I think this would be a more effective method. Well, thank you, Rose. I think there's many methods to groiping. I like all the different approaches, and people are free to do what they think is the best method. I think the important thing is, though, that people have fun, because these things are meant to be fun. Thank you for the super chat. Top Cat gave £5. Thank you very much. And said, this is apparently this 37 words that has popped up in the chat. God has endowed the British race with a worldwide empire that they may execute his sovereign purpose in the world. The victories you will have over the heathens are the victories of the noblest soul in man. That's not as good as the 14 words. Sounds a little bit silly and larpy to me.
As an American, I find that kind of laughable, to be honest.
That's just really,
to be honest with you.
Well, that's the kind of thing that Sargon would think was really clever.
Look,
Sargon would be the kind of guy that was getting people to spam 37 in my chat to
sign. British race, our empire.
And also, the British isn't a race.
Liberals. It's
a union of nations. Ethnicities are groups like the English, the Irish, the Scots, and the Welsh. So enough of this 37 nonsense. Well,
that's true, but if you go back to... I'll just say one thing real quick on that. If you go back to anything written sort of pre-war or pre-World Wars, like a lot of times nationalities were referred to as races. But it's clear when you're reading these books from context that's what they mean, a nationality rather than a race. Like they'll talk about the French race, the British race. They will talk about it like that. But it's just the meaning of the word has kind of changed over time to being the whole racial group rather than just like a nationality. But
The Thin Red Line gave $5, and this is for Jason and Mike. But we need to get through these as quick as possible. Jason and Mike, when will we see an American nationalist political party? Thank you very much for the donation.
Stay tuned. Like Papa John said.
good. We'll leave it at that.
I'm not going to give too much away to say there's a lot of us that are talking right now. We are organizing something, and there's going to be an announcement soon.
Okay,
about something like that. Although we're not branded as American nationalists, that's not going to be the brand for obvious reasons. There's people that have taken that up, and we have certain disagreements with them. While we wish them well, that's not the path we're going down. So we have a little bit of a different way we're going to be presenting ourselves. But you'll see soon.
Okay, thank you. Unknown Californian gave another $5. Thank you very much. And said, Milo's appearance on the kill stream was really disgusting. I can't believe anyone would associate with him. Deport Milo and Sargon. I agree, and we shall move on.
Yeah, no need to belabor that point.
No. Gave £5 and said, hello, Mark. Would you be able to give your opinion on the legacy of Sir Oswald Mosley? I think Sir Oswald Mosley was a great man. He opposed the Second World War. And if people had listened to him, not only would millions of British lives been saved, but also communism would have been unlikely to dominate the world as it has done, and hundreds of millions of lives would have been saved elsewhere. The world would be a better place if Sir Oswald Mosley has been listened to, and that is going to get clipped out, and the sieve cuts are going to use it against me.
And not just that, though. Like, we wouldn't be having what we're having now. We wouldn't be having these unruly ethnic, you know, non-white ethnic mobs in America and Britain and all across Europe. The ideology that won in World War II, the group that backs that ideology is in power now, in complete and uncontested power now. And their main fear is an awakening of our people to fight back against them and take power back for ourselves. They won. They won unequivocally. If you don't like those statues being torn down, then you should have been marching with him if you were alive 75 years ago. And if you think that that's like, oh, bad optics, well, then you know what's really bad optics? Having your race die. That's terrible. That's a bad look. So really, what's this is the thing. This is what's great about this moment is these kind of radical points can be made. And you know who's going to be more receptive to it? A normie. A normie is going to be more receptive to this kind of radical rhetoric right now than someone who's been boiling in the political stew for years and has chosen a conservative position. They're going to fight against it forever because they stake their claim and they can't deal with reality as it is because they just chose to stake out a position that doesn't deal with reality for purposes of career advancement or money or optics or access or pretenses of power or whatever it might be. But the normie who doesn't have a stake in the power system and sees reality for what it is right now, you could say, you know what? Oswald Mosley was right. And he'd be like, you know what? You're right. You're really right. Guaranteed. In Britain, people in America don't really know who he was, but in Britain, go to an average blue-collar guy and say that to him. You will get a positive reception today. Guaranteed.
Well, thank you. English Weather gave $25. Thank you very much for the donation, and thank you for the support. Marty Morosley gave £3 and said, Mike, what nationalist groups in the US do you think are doing good, effective works? Thoughts on Patrick Casey and the American Identity Movement, but can you please be quick on this because we've only got 10 minutes.
I don't really have any thoughts on them. I like what Patriot Front is doing, though they have very good demonstrations and that's why they never get covered in the media because they do very effective, very really good controlled, nothing extraneous happening. They're very good at keeping their space. So yeah, that's what I would say. I don't have any comment on that other group.
Thank you. Unknown Californian gave $3 and said, hashtag Jewish privilege was so funny on Twitter. Angelo John Gage had some people fooled that he was a tribe member. Well, thank you very much. HM gave $3 and said, give me one thing, white racial consciousness. Thank you very much. Pep gave £10 and said, this one's really for me. It says, thoughts on pushing for Welsh ethno-nationalism. The biggest argument against British nationalism from the left is the fact the English are part German, Dane, Britain. However, the Welsh remained indigenous, so surely we are pushing at an open door in Wales. We need to push for ethno-nationalism for the English, the Scottish, the Welsh, and the Irish. We need to push it for everybody, not just in Wales. I think that we're pushing an open door anywhere, because if you actually look at what archaeologists say, they state that the vast majority of British DNA has changed very little since the last ice age, so we are all indigenous. And the last successful invasion of Britain, which was in 1066, the vast majority of those who came to fight and invade actually left. So the biggest change we've seen to the people of Britain has been post Second World War. So thank you for Super Chat. Nathan Hill gave £5. Thanks, Mark. Sterling work. Thank you very much. This is a really good Super Chat, so I'm just going to read this out in whole. This is €25 from Marie Curie. Thank you very much for the donation. She said, I never thought about kids. I thought work is important and being independent. Then I met a good man and I figured I better have a kid before it's too late. With 41 years, I had my only child and we are so happy with her. Now I wish I hadn't been waiting for so long. I tell my daughter every week to start a family early. That is some good advice. Thank you for the Super Chat. Junta Mominari gave $3 and said Jews in Singapore make up about 0.1854% of the population. About, that's a very exact number, but 6% of the billionaires indeed. And finally, Unknown California gave $5 and says, I now have one year old thanks to people in the dissident right, like Mike, Mark, Jeff and Jason. I'm so grateful I found you all. Well, I'm grateful for the Super Chat and well done on the child. That is superb news. Congratulations. And I hope you have another. Now we're going to do three really quick questions from the question panel. Albion Forever said, thoughts on Milo admitting to being a Fed and trying to gay up Richard Spencer. Anyone that trusted Milo pretty much got what they deserved. That's the guy was gay, Jewish, had a black husband. If you were spilling your guts to him, you got what.
And now he's pretending to be a Catholic. I mean, come on. But look, I'll just say this. I met Milo one time. I didn't like him. I never got in contact with him or talked to him ever again. And you know who's not in that little hard drive he showed on the internet? Me. And it's because I had the instinct, like, this guy is not, I don't like this guy. And sure enough, wow. I mean, I wasn't surprised when they came out. It didn't surprise me at all. It was sort of confirmation of something that people had long suspected. But there it is. It's in black and white, in court documents. The dude is a federal informant. He's been doing it for years. He collects information of his personal contacts on a hard drive that he hands over to the FBI and to anti-white activists. So if you're friends with this guy, or you are, you know, looking to people that are friends with this guy, maybe rethink this. He's a scumbag. And yeah, he was a drunken fool on the internet the other night. I only saw like 2 seconds of it. And I was like, I can't even be reduced to watching this. This is a mess. This is trash. Garbage.
Thank you. Adam said, with The Guardian, that's a left-wing British newspaper, announcing tonight plans to cut 180-plus jobs. Revenue's down by 25 million. Is this beginning of the slow end of this anti-white commie outlet, or will a fellow bail them out? Look, this is fantastic news. All these anti-white papers are going under. They've said that coronavirus was going to be all bad. Well, goodbye, Guardian. Goodbye, many of these anti-white local papers owned by the Trinity Mirror Group. I remember some horrible, horrible piece of work in one of the local papers who attacked and besmirched that girl who'd been brutally beaten by a grooming gang. They're all going to lose their jobs. Good, good. I hope it ruins them, and I am so, so happy to see The Guardian out of business. This is great news. Do any of you guys want to gloat on this issue before we move on to the next question?
I wasn't aware of it, but you love to see it. I mean, anyway, I'm sorry. If you work for that paper, you know, particularly if you're producing content or you are ideologically on board, like, you deserve to lose your livelihood. Screw you. And it's because, you know, people don't want what you're selling. People don't want what you're selling. So, you know, I don't think that paper is going to go on there, because I think the prediction that the person made, a fellow will bail them out or will give them money. Because, you know, a lot of these papers don't necessarily make money. Like the New York Times itself, which is the American equivalent of The Guardian, they occupy the same space. They don't make money as the paper. The New York Times Corporation makes a lot of money, but they have other investments and other properties and other businesses, and they have an endowment. But the subscribers are not funding the work that they do. The work they do is so important to the elites and the political class and those in power that they will stay there no matter what. But it's great to see when they have to take hits like this, because every time they take a hit, that's less money, less energy, less power coming at us. They have to regroup.
Thank you. We've got one last super chat from Syrup, who gave £5. Thank you very much. And he said, the purpose of the media is to protect pedophiles and stop.
I mean, he's not wrong, right? Like, if you were like an alien that came to Earth and observed things from an objective standpoint, you would not be wrong in kind of drawing that conclusion.
Indeed, indeed. And we have one last question. Marty Morosi said, will identity be sold from the website anytime soon? We could do with a replacement for Yorkshire Tea's cuck bags. Yes. Well, we are still working on picking the name. That is down to Laura. When Laura Towler is ready to announce the name of her brand of tea, we will be announcing it and hopefully selling it from the website. It is something that we are very much looking forward to. And the next question, which we would ask, but I'm not going to, is from Son of Britain. And he says, thoughts on the new Black Lives Matter statue in Britain? And of course, we have answered that rather exhaustively over the course of the show. And it has been an incredible show. We have had over 2,900 people watching. Again, we are hitting numbers on DLive that are bigger than any of our YouTube streams ever were. And I've just got to thank Mike for that. Mike, I know tonight has been a hectic show, and this 2 hours has just flown past. It's been such an absolute pleasure hosting you. Do you have any final words, or do you have anything you would like to plug before the end of the show? Because it's always amazing having you on. And I always say this, but I'd like to have you on much more often than we get you on, because the audience just love you, mate. Your work is incredible.
I mean, thank you for the kind words. And I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot of crossover in our fan base and our viewers and, you know, the rightstuff.biz. Check it out. You know, we do not have, people always wonder, like, how do these guys have credit cards? a lot of hard work and ingenuity, but that came to an end. So you can subscribe by sending us a money order through the mail or using Bitcoin. I got to thank our listeners and our supporters. I was skeptical that when we lost the ability to do credit cards, that we would maintain the level of support, but people have come through every morning. Our mailbox is stuffed. Love to see it. Thanks, everybody. And, you know, there's several people whose livelihoods are supported by you doing that. And just thanks, everyone. And love to be on the show. And we should definitely be doing this more often. That's it. Thanks.
Well, thank you. And I've just been informed by the chat that at peak, we actually did break the 3,000 mark. So that's two shows in a row with over 3,000 viewers. Excellent. That is just incredible. And smashing the record that we previously held from YouTube, which was just over 2,700. So I'm overwhelmed by
a lot
of
people.
It is a lot of people. And yeah, I just want to thank everyone. Thank everyone for being here. Jason, can we have some final words from you, my friend? And who's on tap this week?
Well, once again, we have James Fox Higgins on Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You'll be able to find that on No White Guilt, Discipline with NWG, and all of the other platforms that we are on. 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Friday. We're going to have a great discussion with him. Of course, he created that fantastic song, This Is America. Maybe we'll play it while we're live with him. And otherwise, it has been fantastic to appear with Mike again. No one has as sharp a tongue as Mike Enoch, and we're glad to have him on with us and have truth and have a laugh with it at the same time. And of course, I decided that we had that question about the debate, who would win, and I'm going to say Mark Collett. Anybody recommend be in the running or not? But I'm going to be going live for a little bit talking about news after the show today. And so if anybody wants to come over, No White Guilt and on YouTube, and of course you can find me on all the other platforms as well. And Mark, I will pass it back to you. Thank you so much, brother, and thank you to everyone who was here today. Remember to let all of your friends and family know that we have the wind in our sails right now, and we are going to take back our destiny. Mark.
Well, thank you. Thank you to both Mike, and thank you to Jason. And thank you for the kind words saying I'd win the debate. I was quite good at debating, but no one will debate me anymore because I smashed too many people far too hard. Sargon cucked. Tommy Robinson never accepted the opportunity. Anne-Marie Waters, she wouldn't debate me either, but at the moment I hear she's having another struggle with something else. She's on Wake Up UK, and she appeared to be in a rather worse for wear state the other week, so I think she's got enough problems without having to debate me. But before we wrap up, somebody is on a debate this week. And of course, we're talking about the lovely Laura Towler, the deputy leader of PA. She's actually debating somebody for Britain on Friday night. I am very much looking forward to this. And I believe that will be an absolutely fantastic debate. I'll be promoting that all through the day. Please make sure you tune in. I think it's going to be on Patriotic Talks DLive channel. And as I said, I'll be pumping out the links through the day. So thank you so much for being here, and please do support that. I will also be back on Friday with my regular video, and my regular video is about Jewish terrorist links to Black Lives Matter. So that will be a very interesting video, and that will be, of course, a DLive exclusive. That isn't going to be on YouTube. Anyone who is shocked about that should not.
Why not?
Front page of YouTube trending, I don't think. Anyway, thank you. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to Mike. Thank you to everybody who donated so generously. But as always, thank you so much to everybody in the chat. Thank you to everyone who watched live, whether that be here, whether that be on Radio Albion, or whether that be through Entropy. It was another fantastic night with over 3,000 people here on DLive alone. We are smashing it, guys. This really is a wonderful, wonderful record-breaking time for our movement. So thank you so much. I love you guys. You are the reason that this community is so vibrant and the reason we are going places. And I just cannot wait for August the 9th. And if you're not ready for August the 9th yet, go to the Patriotic Alternative website. Go to the big bar across the middle of the website that says White Lives Matter. Get your banners, get your leaflets, get your posters. Get ready for the day of activism. It is going to be huge. And that just leaves me to say thank you, Jason. Thank you, Mike. Thank you to everyone who's here in the chat. Stay safe, and we will see you same time next week. We will be back for another episode of PWR, and the guest will be Bernardine Bluntley. It is going to be good. Be here. Thank you so much. Look after yourselves, and have a great night.